Might get Oscar Weekly.
Is MMO Weekly.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show that comes to you once a week, highlighting the Hollywood week that was, getting you ready for the Holly Weird week to come. This is Mike, and Oscar Weekly, hashtag MMO Weekly, hashtag MMOW. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host, also Mike.
Another post-Oscars week where we thought it would be like a lull. Finally, we get a lull. We get to relax. We get to program all this audience stuff. And then one big story after another, Avengers trailer. We got a lot going on in this episode. Captain Marvel crushing it at the box office. News stories about scandals. News stories about non-scandals.
Yeah.
You know, feel-good stories, aggravating stories. Trailers. Ton of trailers dropped this week. And we got something to promote, too.
Is it a post-Oscars week, or is it a pre-Oscars week now?
I think it's always been a pre-Oscars week.
In a pre-Oscars world.
Once the last Oscars ended, we went right to pre-Oscars for the next year, pretty much. But yeah, we do have that first promo that you were.
Yeah, we had a lovely conversation with was a comedic voice that I have a lot of respect for and I've been on to for a while. Nick Kocher, one half of the comedy duo Britannic. He's written for Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's written for SNL. He's been in a couple feature films. He's doing a lot of comedy writing. We were fortunate enough to get a couple minutes of his time. We did that interview this past weekend. That'll be out for all you guys probably Wednesday this week. Mm-hmm. So really looking forward to that. That was really exciting, and he's awesome. He's one of my personal heroes.
Really funny, made us laugh a lot, and told us his origin story pretty much, which was great. We love hearing those. And then we got into SNL and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at the end of it all, and that was just a ton of fun. He's such a great guy. He went over time for us again.
Yeah.
So we keep getting these comedians, we keep getting these film experts. It's been a lot of fun with our new series MMO Interviews. Check out that entire playlist. A lot of big names, a lot of ascending names for certain, and
for sure,
and award season experts like we've talked to you about before. We kind of ushered in Oscar night with Scott Feinberg. We discussed all the aftermath and the fallout with Clayton Davis of Award Circuit, so Hollywood Reporter, Award Circuit, like we say, big names. Why they're talking to us, we don't get it, but we
appreciate it. Yeah. We got a couple more interviews in the pipeline, a couple other people that I've been talking to that have agreed, so hopefully those will come through and those will be with you in the coming months.
You are a great booking agent right now.
I think I'm just annoying and people want me out of their messages.
You're doing an awesome job. I'm always thrilled to get a text from Mike at a weird hour. Oh, guess what? Who wants to do our show?
Someone said yes, just please stop messaging me. Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. But let's start off MMO Weekly like we always do. Talk about what we're watching, Michael.
We have a lot of fun interviews coming, but this is what we're watching.
You got a deep gravel into that one too this time. That was nice. Like Aretha Franklin type stuff.
I'm so embarrassed every time I hear myself singing. So embarrassed, but it's just part of our shtick now, and I guess I have to keep doing
that. That is our theme song for the segment. Go ahead.
Speaking of comedians, we both finished Crashing Season 3
on HBO. This is a
HBO.
Mistake by HBO. This is just a mistake.
They have canceled it. We hope we'll get a movie at some point. I want to ask you, Mike, do you think this is a fitting conclusion? Does this satisfy
no!
you?
No, I want more. Yeah, it was fine. I don't think they intended it to be a serious conclusion or a serious finale, but you know, it was a nice, that last scene is very nice and very, it does bring everything full circle, so I get it.
Do you think they shot that last scene thinking, what if we're canceled?
Yes, yeah. I do think they had enough foresight for that. I'm really just surprised that HBO went forward with this, because this is the type of sitcom, I don't even think it's a sitcom, but it's a type of half-hour comedy show that it can be something. It can be culturally relevant. It could turn into something. But usually those types of shows take a good 5 or 6 seasons to kind of marinate in the zeitgeist. I mean, look at The Office. Yeah. That wasn't huge in its third season. But season 5, 6, it became a cultural touchstone.
They probably got a deep bench of other shows.
I'm sure. It's HBO.
So it's the prestige network.
It's not TV. Yeah, as they like to say.
So this was a tough blow for me, too, because I just got into the series the last couple of months, post-Oscar, really, last couple of weeks
right.
post-Oscars. I've done a
binge. It's an easy binge.
it's an easy binge, and I've loved every minute of it. I love shows about aspiring comedians. I did Maisel too, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and we reviewed that last week. I do think this was a fitting way to end the show. It's like his most humiliating situation yet as a stand-up, and it gets kind of reversed where he triumphs a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
And for once, the poor guy's made us suffer with all these situations up till now, and to see him, you know, prosper a little bit, and then, of course, with the relationship angle with the last few scenes, it really worked for me. I really love this comedian, love the show.
It's so well-written, and it's so nice to have a half-hour comedy show that's not like something on CBS, you know, that's kind of like, has to be PC all the time. It has to please a general audience. It's
rated
a little edgier. Yeah.
John Mulaney had a great cameo.
He's great. He's great in everything. Yeah. He was hysterical in that episode. But yeah, if you haven't seen Crashing, go check out HBO Now, HBO Go, whatever kind of streaming service you have for HBO. Definitely worth your time and an easy binge, like we said.
Absolutely. Another easy binge, or what it turned out to be, was QB1 Beyond the Lights. I watched season 2 on Netflix this week.
Were you taking notes? Did you have like a telestrator in front of you?
Yeah.
As a coach?
It's good football. They're talking good ball, and it's just really fun. They follow three of the top recruited quarterbacks in high school football going to college in their senior years. This past season was about Justin Fields, who was the number one overall recruit, went to Georgia behind Jake Fromm. He has now transferred to Ohio State, but big time Georgia football right there. You had the eventual freshman starting quarterback for Wake Forest, Sam Hartman, who had been a two-time state championship winner in South Carolina, follows his coach taking over a program that has never won didn't win a game. It was 0-8, and he follows his coach to this 0-18, and they have a fun season. And then, of course, they always have one of like the most elite programs in the country. So Rial Mitchell, eventual quarterback for Iowa State, and he played a little bit for Iowa State too last year. So basically, this award show goes back to the 2017 campaign,
right?
And then they've had their freshman season in 2018, so it's like 2 years ago. I just love it so much. And who says I don't watch reality TV?
Did you say boom a lot? Like John Madden watching? Going around the cut and then boom right there.
I expected the coaches, because the coach I work for in high school football says it all the time.
Oh, does he really?
Essentially. And he says it during the plays. Like if you're standing, he says it at least like three times. Good job, boom. Boom, boom, boom.
I got a guy in the backfield coming off the corner. They go boom. Yeah.
This is like 100 times a practice. He will say the word boom. And
coach,
no,
I need to quit.
For your redundancy in language, I need to quit. No, but during this show, I did not hear one boom.
Oh, really all right. Didn't. Well, it's nice to know that some coaches in football don't all say this, have the same vocabulary.
Maybe their new school, John Madden, was a bit there. I don't know.
You watched the movie, the big movie that came out this week on Netflix. I haven't had a chance to take it in. Do any of the main characters, the big five, die?
Yeah,
they do.
Triple Frontier. This is Triple Frontier on Netflix. This is written by Mark Bull, J.C. Chandor. Done a lot of good stuff. This is kind of an infuriating movie. This is...
You don't say.
It's aggravating. It's melodramatic. It really pissed me off.
Probably not going to win an Oscar is what you're saying here?
No. I mean, there's some really good action set pieces. I like that. But these guys are on such another level than everybody they're facing, that it's very strange.
Is Ben Affleck ever shirtless, and do we see his back?
No, we do not. So he's probably, you know, writing that into his contracts these days after the reception.
CGI my back.
That's
tattoo.
A lot of surgeries to get rid of that tattoo, because that's a bright and deep tattoo.
I hope
and large tattoo.
He needs to be buried face down. He needs to show that off to the world.
Yeah, unfortunately that movie didn't work for me. It's not a terrible watch, you know, it's big production values, but I didn't love it. The Lego Movie 2, the second part, saw that in theaters. Worth a few laughs, but Mike, this is totally a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And I'm just too old for it. Like, it's about little brother and a little sister getting along together. So it's just like, I'm sure it's a great movie to bring your kids. I mean,
that's kind of surprising, because the first Lego movie was, you know, there wasn't adult themes or anything, but it certainly placated.
It was more
audience.
Of the Pixar vein,
yeah,
where there's a lot of adult movie references.
Yeah, and
goods,
there was like,
and,
you know, there was adult emotions at stake and stuff. Yeah.
The word adult has been corrupted by certain other industries now. But bottom line,
they have graphic sex.
No, yeah. There's crossover appeal. There's crossover appeal.
Just two
in
pieces
the Lego
of plastic
movie one.
Banging into each other. Yeah.
And this, I did not get that. The other thing I watched was M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit yesterday.
I still have not seen this. So I know the ending. I know the twist. This was Shyamalan's, like, quote-unquote return to form.
Right.
It got a lot of high marks. I saw you were watching it. I wanted to ask you about it. Did you know anything about it going in?
I either guessed the ending or at some point you told it to me because you're a spoiler alert freak.
I ruined The Sixth Sense for my brother back
it's
in the day.
It's possible
so yes.
You told me at some okay. point. But I knew it, once the act one ended, like once they arrived at the grandparents' house and the grandfather said one thing that was just overt exposition, I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen. I messaged one of our listeners on Twitter about it.
I saw that.
I spoiled the movie for him, too, because I thought like he had seen it already.
I'm the devil. What?
Yeah, Aaron V. Official was asking me. He's always involved in our audience interactions.
Okay, so you figured out the ending, but was it still a worthwhile watch?
It was. Okay. It's still a fun watch and there's spectacle. Like, this kid should not be rapping ever. He aggravated me. And it was like this little thing, hey, this little kid raps. He's a good rapper for being a little kid, but please, just enough. Enough. And I'm sure he's very embarrassed about it to this day because he's becoming a pretty good actor.
I feel like that's a blanket statement you could say to a lot of youth out there right now. Yeah. Maybe don't rap.
Maybe don't rap.
Just you know, find something else.
But other than that, it works. Totally works as a
good.
As a
I'm glad to hear
thriller,
that.
And I did enjoy it. Mike, what did you watch this week?
I caught up on a lot of TV. It takes such a big commitment from me anymore to get into a movie
that we're not reviewing.
Yes, that we don't review.
Because we reviewed a bunch of movies the last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. Something if I'm going to just watch for quote-unquote enjoyment. It's such a big, like, I have both John Wick 1 and Ready Player 1 I bought as, like, they were on sale. I'm trying to build a huge Blu-ray collection, which also Mike busts my balls about all the time.
So this is the thing. Like, it takes no commitment for you to purchase these films.
Right, exactly.
Sight unseen. Yes. You're the blind buy maniac that
absolutely.
I was always afraid of becoming mm-hmm. throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And that is you. Like, I always break your balls
yeah.
by something on your shelf
right
every time I come here
exactly I will buy it because I want a big Blu-ray collection but like taking the time and my thought is always like it's going to take me 2 hours if I don't like it I know I'm not going to stop I'm just going to sit through it
yeah.
and I have to understand it and be the coherent and so I'm so trepidatious and like I said John Wick and Ready Player One I've unwrapped them there I put them close to my DVD player whatever so many times I just can't pull the trigger so I've held off on it
but you're also a focus movie watcher so we've reviewed a bunch of movies the last few weeks in our OSPs.
Yeah.
We've also did like horror movie experiences, so we've been watching stuff on the side. So bottom line is, I think my view of you right now as a movie watcher is like, when we don't have a lot of movies to review, like at the end of Oscar season, you were watching a movie a day.
I was, saying. Yeah, yeah.
And you were.
I was in a groove there.
You were proving it based on the MMOWs.
Right.
Now that you have, you know,
it's slowed down a little bit. I'm
homework
yeah.
from your asshole teacher. You don't.
I've kind of slowed down, but I'll get back into it. I have to watch them because you're right. I spend all my money on them, and I need to do something with them. They can't just collect dust. But I have been watching TV, mm-hmm. and I just started last night. I'd watched Mad Men season one previously mm-hmm. years ago. I gave up on it for some reason, so I just rewatched episode one of season one. The series premiere last night, and I'm going to try to binge that and have that fill up some free time for me.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Like I said, I've never gotten past season one, and it's gotten nothing but high remarks and grades, and everybody seems to universally praise it.
Hell of a show. I mean, it's not one of those that it's always going to be stimulating. It's always going to be, you know, up-tempo, but it's a worthwhile show.
Right,
yeah.
I liked it. So I'm looking forward to that. I've been binging Corporate on Comedy Central, which is just hysterical.
I've seen a little bit of Corporate.
So apropos. I'd love to talk to those guys to see how they got this thing through standards and practices. And they have, like, the uncensored versions are on demand as well, so everyone
okay.
can, the swearing gets through and all the sexual references get through and it's just so funny. It kills me every time. Crashing I also watch, like I talked about you. I've been watching The Prophet a lot.
What is The Prophet?
So it's a business show. It's a reality type TV show on CNBC where this millionaire called Marcus Lemonis goes to different small businesses and invests in them or not. And he talks about the people, the practice, and the something else. This is why I'm not a business person. The three Ps, the people, the practice, and the... I don't think it's a profit, but whatever. and he talks. He goes through all these small businesses and talks about the markets for them and investing in them. And you get the whole top-down view of what's going on. I've always watched it. I found it absolutely fascinating. And it's a really drama-driven show. And shit always comes up in small business. So it's terrifying.
Well, you basically exhibited why we have so many ideas on the MMO shelf. We had a production meeting before we hit record today, and you memorized the first two steps. And I'm the same way.
Yeah,
maybe I'll memorize the last
two steps. It's a microcosm of a bigger issue.
But we have all these other ideas we want to do on our show. And this is our website, which is two-thirds of the way done or whatever it is now. And bottom line is, that fits. It fits our schedule.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But when we come out with a new idea, we crush it.
So. We hope to. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, I've been just watching a lot of old TV, a lot of new, I guess relatively old TV. Nothing really new except for corporate and the profit, but that's just what I've been doing. Commitment issues with the Blu-rays, man. I got to get back into it. I got to just take the dive and watch something worthwhile.
You know, there's like on demand where you can watch like any movie ever, right?
Not interested. Let's move on. Audience interaction here. 6 Degrees of MMO. We had one this week from a couple weeks ago. Martin Scorsese linking up to Awkwafina, and thank God we kicked it down the week, down the road. Down the road is what I'm looking for. Thank God we kicked it down the road another week, because we actually had one of the two people respond to us.
And yes.
Apologies to everyone who, you know, responded and hoped that they would win this week. And Awkwafina is the winner this week.
Awkwafina said Martin Scorsese produced Wolf of Wall Street with Jonah Hill, who was in This Is the End, Knocked Up, Sausage Party, and 40-Year-Old Virgin with Seth Rogen, who was in Neighbors 2 with me.
Beautiful.
Awkwafina.
The real actress, singer, Awkwafina, responding to our 6 Degrees of MMO. That was really, really cool of her to play along. We thank her. And obviously, she wins this week. And it kind of blew me away when I saw
that. That was fun.
I was like, well, of course you win. This is not fair.
I like that she, you know, chronicled all four Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen connections. And then I like, you know, Neighbors 2, which is, I think, is an underrated comedy.
It is. And there's a lot of talent in that, too.
Beanie Feldstein, Lady Bird. She's going to be in
Beanie Feldstein,
trailer
Selena
we're talking
Gomez,
about later on.
Chloe Grace Moretz, Awkwafina, obviously. A lot of talent in that movie. And it is an underrated comedy. But again, it really was really cool to see Awkwafina partake and play in this game with us. And so obviously, she is the winner. And I think she has an automatic pass to the 6 Degrees of MMO Hall of Fame, if she ever wants to play again. So
you are such a kiss ass.
Are you not going to put her in the Hall of Fame?
I was excited when I saw she responded to it. That is a lot of fun.
Ben is just stewing right now listening to this.
Well, we got some honorable mentions
are
thoroughly honorable, because we had some really good responses this week. So we're going to read a bunch of those. The Cinema Guys, they said Scorsese directed The Departed with Leo, who was in Inception with Michael Caine, who was in Now You See Me with Dave Franco, who's in Neighbors 2 with Awkwafina. I like that. Neighbors 2 got another shout out here. Another quick one, Invasion of the Remake at Invasion Remake. Awkwafina was in Ocean's 8 with Griffin Dunn, who was in After Hours, directed by Martin Scorsese. He got it and won there from Invasion of the Remake. But we also had a couple more people get it and won.
Yeah, at Cinema Joe's, at Piece of Pie Pod, at Matt Starfighter with one T on Matt. All did it in one or two chains, however you wanted to define it. They used Cate Blanchett and The Aviator to get to Martin Scorsese, obviously the director of The Aviator, which then Cate Blanchett was in Ocean's 8 with Awkwafina. And a lot of people were highlighted that and made us feel stupid for not realizing that. So we appreciate and thank all of you for that ahead of time.
Yeah. But a lot of people, Mike, used a ton of links.
Yes.
And they had a lot of fun with it. Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show at Amazing Nerd Show. Scorsese.
Yeah, like those guys.
Yeah, we like those guys. Scorsese directed Goodfellas, starring Joe Pesci, who also starred in Lethal Weapon 4, that also starred Jet Li, who starred in Expendables, that also starred Sylvester Stallone, who starred in Demolition Man, that also starred Sandra Bullock, who co-starred with Awkwafina, Ocean's 8. A lot of fun movie references in that.
Yeah, I really like that one, because it's like hard-hitting action movie, Ocean's 8.
They're an amazing, amazing nerd pod.
Jedi Dropouts production at Jedi_Dropouts. They were here last week, or last time we did 6 Degrees as well. Okay, I tried to find the weirdest backdoor route to get there, and here's my best. This is what he put forward. Scorsese directed Bringing Out the Dead, starring Nicolas Cage, who also appeared in The Rock, which was directed by Michael Bay, who also directed Armageddon, featuring Peter Stormare, who did voiceover work in Netflix's Castlevania series alongside Richard Armitage, who appears in Ocean's 8 with Awkwafina. I was surprised how many Ocean's 8 people people went with. Because you do have Neighbors too. You do have Crazy Rich Asians from last year.
Yeah.
And people kept gravitating back to the Ocean's 8 parallel. I guess that makes sense because that was kind of a loaded cast.
True.
So there's a lot of entry points there.
True, makes sense. It also, I would have thought of Michelle Yeoh at first, and I would have thought of, you know, Constance Wu at first.
Crouching Tiger, yeah, sure. I probably would have gone Crazy Rich Asians myself.
Another usual contributor, at the one Hanson, this is Mark Burgundy, says Awkwafina was in Neighbors 2 with Seth Rogen, who shares a birthday
Love
with
this.
Luke Evans, who was in Blitz with Jason Statham, who shares a birthday, Michael, with Sandra Bullock, who was in A Time to Kill with Matthew McConaughey, who was in Wolf of Wall Street, directed by Martin Scorsese. Love that one.
Jason Statham, like, I had to look up that Blitz was a real movie because he's the type of guy that could be in like any of these one word type of movies that sound like they need an exclamation point at the end of them. And you could make it up and I believe it's Jason. Like Jason Statham's in POW.
Jason Statham's in Roar.
I remember seeing POW and Roar, I think, back in like the early 2010s.
Yeah, that's funny.
Cinema Shape at Cinema Shape. Awkwafina was in Crazy Rich Asians. There we go with Henry Golding, who was in A Simple Favor with Blake Lively. Yes, he was. Who was in The Town with the excellent Pete Postlewaite, who was in Romeo and Juliet with Leo DiCaprio, of course, who was in Scorsese's best film, Shutter Island, he goes. I love Shutter Island. It's
Me
one
too.
Of my underrated
Me
favorites.
Too. I like that entry. The Depressed Movie Gover at Depressed Movie says Scorsese.
Sounds like he'd fit right in with us.
Yeah. Do I have to give a depressed voice now? Scorsese
really
directed
and,
Hugo, which depressed me as a moviegoer.
You could start crying halfway through.
Starring Sacha Baron Cohen, who's married to Isla Fisher, who is in Now You See Me, with Mark Ruffalo, who is in Thor Ragnarok, which, you know, perked my mood up a bit, with Kate Blanchett, who starred in Ocean's 8 with Awkwafina. And he says, bam with a comma. That is a depressed moviegoer, not an exclamation point.
So it's not a Jason Statham movie.
No, not a Jason Statham movie. Very good, Michael.
Nick Colton at Nick Mickle, NICMICCUL. Martin Scorsese directed Wolf of Wall Street, of course, starring 2014 Best Actor nominee Leo DiCaprio. Fellow 2014 Best Actor nominee Matthew McConaughey starred in Tropic Thunder with Bill Hader, SNL partner of John Mulaney, who presented two Oscars with Awkwafina. That's a very Mike and Oscar type answer.
I like that
yeah.
a lot.
Same here.
All right, so now we got some heavy hitters. I think it would come down to these last few if we actually picked a non-Awkwafina winner. Ben Miller at Neb is Ben probably holds the belt right now. It has for a while. He says voices only exclamation point. Martin Scorsese in Shark Tale with Renee Zellweger, who is in Monsters vs. Aliens with Will Arnett, who is in The Lego Movie with Keegan-Michael Key, who is in Storks with Awkwafina.
Storks.
That's amazing.
Is Storks a real movie?
It is a real movie.
That actually came out?
Does not star Jason Statham.
If you put an exclamation, that's another Jason Statham movie. John Stork is a bus driver.
Oh, that's his last name.
Yeah, Stork. Yeah, and he gets a bomb on the bus, is what it is.
And storks are flying overhead the whole movie.
Thank you for coming to my pitch.
Nothing but just low angle viewpoints. Storks in the background.
Dare Daniel Movie Podcast at Dare Daniel Pod. He did Martin Scorsese, made Taxi Driver, of course. Taxi drivers drive cars a lot. Driving cars is a big part of Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max featured a villain hoarding water. Water is bottled by a brand named Awkwafina. Awkwafina got bootlegged by Awkwafina. That's I fun. Said when we pitched this 6 degrees, I'm not sure if I was going to add or deduct points if you were to link it to the Awkwafina
right.
Water Company. I appreciate this one. This one was really good.
It's funny. It's funny. So that's a great entry to the 6 degrees of MMO list right now. We do have a new challenge for you. So great job, everybody. Let's get ready for next week.
And let's see if Awkwafina can be a two-time returning champion on this one.
All right. I don't know if she's worked with this actress, but if so, then maybe she can have fun.
It'd be an easy win, yeah.
Yeah. Haley Lou Richardson's got a new movie out this week, 5 Feet Apart. Mm-hmm. Did pretty good at the box office, got good reviews. She's a favorite of mine. Columbus, she was in. She was awesome in that. She's great in Support the Girls from last year. Career really on the rise. So we start with Haley Lou Richardson. And, of course, we got to go with something from someone from us, Jordan Peele. So it's Haley, easy enough. Yeah, Haley Lou Richardson to Jordan Peele. That is your next challenge for 6 degrees of MMO. Do it in one if you can, but get crazy creative and have some fun with it.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing all your entries. You guys have not disappointed thus far. Definitely retweet, tell your friends, share it all. We love getting as many people involved as we can. We love picking winners each week, and we love seeing you guys really take the MMO slant here and have fairly mundane and meaningless relationships between two non-connected things. Establish a link in your 6 degrees chain, and we really appreciate that. So keep up the good work. Thank you, everyone, for participating this week. We look forward to seeing your answers next week, and that includes you, Awkwafina. Get back to us.
So we had a couple MMO asks this past week. The first one, we got a few responses on. We said, guess the plot for us. What our listeners did is they kind of guessed the plot synopsis, I would say, because a tweet only has 280 characters or whatever it is. Ryan L. Terry at rlterryrealview.com or at rlterry1 on Twitter. He said he hopes us is based on, quotes, the After Hours Twilight Zone episode. This family encounters their doppelgangers on a beach vacay when they do not remember that it's time to switch out and return to the facility. The doppelgangers must kill them to return balance to the scientific experiment.
That's basically what your guess the plot was.
Kind of was. So that's pretty cool, RL Terry Realview.
Who knows? I'm looking forward to it. It's gotten great reviews thus far. We're going to have that for you guys at some point this week after we watch it, probably on opening night ourselves. We also had, as far as our top five horror movie experiences, we asked people what their top five experiences were. We had a lot of people just list off like their five favorites or five that left a big impact, and I was curious to know why. And a couple people indulged us, and we were lucky enough to have them share their memories or their stories with us. Colby Mack at Colby Told Me. He listed Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Exorcist, Scream, House of Wax, and Candyman. He said, I love classic horror villains and memorable horror moments. Freddy was at his peak in Dream Warriors, where the franchise redeemed itself from that weird second movie. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that second movie was totally... I like it, but I know it's very polarizing, but Dream Warriors is kind of universally hailed as one of the best in the series.
I stopped after the second movie. I had never seen any Nightmares. I'd seen the Wes Craven...
The New Nightmare? Yeah. New Nightmare is really good. I've seen those three. And three, Dream Warriors is really good. All the other ones are just, you can get by without seeing them.
Tom Hanks, Defense Force, says Jack's top five. One, The Exorcist. Two, Scream. Halloween, 1978, 28 Days Later, and The Thing. That's his top five. RL Terry, again, at RL Terry 1, said A Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween 2018, which was cool to hear. Don't Breathe, Hereditary, and Get Out are his five.
One more from Andrew at Mouth and Hands. Overlord, The Ring, House of 1,000 Corpses, Black Christmas, the remake, and Jeepers Creepers. I have a huge problem with that because Black Christmas, the remake, is one of the only movies I ever did watch on DVD. This was back in college, and I stopped it. I couldn't finish it. It was abhorrent.
Oh, no.
I hated it. So I don't... props to you. You're a better movie watcher than I am, Andrew. I could not get through that movie.
So you threw it away, not because you were scared, because you were mad.
Just out of disgust.
So something in Act 1 of Black Christmas remake pissed you off. Now, are you a big fan of the original movie?
It's really creepy. It's super, super duper creepy.
I've never seen either one.
Yeah, it's not bad. The original's not bad.
And I'm way too afraid to watch
House of 1,000 Corpses. And I like the remake, too. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in it. I love her. It's just...
Mary Elizabeth Winston's in Black Christmas remake?
In the remake, 2007, I think.
A couple people focused on one movie at In Session Film. They said It, Stephen King's It in 2017 was a personal experience that I'll remember for a long time. The original gave me nightmares as a kid, and I almost refused to see the new one. I was trembling as the film began and ended up liking It, pun intended, a lot.
I'm the same way. I thought It was one of the most well-rounded horror movies to come out in a long time, and I was equally as trepidatious going into the theater to watch it because we remember the Tim Curry portrayal so fondly.
Sure.
Even though if you go back and watch the original miniseries, there's issues with it. But I love the remake as well, the new It, and I'm with In Session there. I think that was a great movie.
And finally, Michael Dean at @mad_tweeter2014. Jaws, because my first watch was on video when I was young, and it truly did make me very afraid of going into the water. I'd avoid it as much as possible. The shark attacking Quint scene messed me up back then. Now as an adult, the pond scene below is what gives me chills.
So did you have this reaction to Jaws at any point?
Not really, but I'm not a big swim in the ocean guy, regardless.
So it doesn't affect your day-to-day.
I'm a land lubber.
But you're a cave diver, and that's why The Descent bothered you so much? Is that what...
I seen those monsters come out into the real world, out of the cave.
Jaws never... I know that's the standard line, and that's like people were scared to go in the ocean. It was a huge, terrifying hit, blah, blah, blah. I just never got... Maybe because I was too old at the time when I saw it, and I knew the history about it beforehand. It just never got to me in that way. So this is me saying I'll probably die by being eaten by a shark this summer, so look forward to that.
Finally, hashtag AskMMO. Always feel free to ask us questions. Aaron V. Official at Aaron V. Official, Aaron, as we've come to call him here. He said, do you think Felicity Huffman will be playing herself in an American Crime reboot? This is a fun rhetorical question. I just leave it there.
That's so bad.
That's funny. We got a box office update.
Yeah, let's talk about the box office update, going through the top 10 for this week of the box office. And no surprise here. Captain Marvel also holding strong, another $69 million domestically here. It's past $200 million domestically, past $250 million. Actually, it's at $266 for the domestic box office, another $494 internationally. It's up to $750 million. Who says female superhero movies don't play?
It's crushing it. It was an interesting strategy to go worldwide all at once, essentially, and it's paying off. 70-60 million worldwide, that is, you know, profit on any budget. They haven't really listed the budget. I think we said something like it was 170, 180.
I found it at 152.
Okay.
That's the whole, when they were shooting in Louisiana, they had to fill out government paperwork forms, I did them research.
That's right.
And you should listen to me when I talk. I'm full of information.
I broke your balls about that.
You did. It's nice to know it didn't stick with you, though, at least.
It did not stick with me, because you said a lot of numbers, and I only listen to adjectives and adverbs when I'm,
The short story of that longer story that we're paraphrasing here is that Marvel had to, by way of shooting in Louisiana, they had to fill out certain documents.
Oh, thanks for telling it again. Yeah.
That are made public to the to everyone that wants to see them, and so on those they had to list their entire budget. That's for people
that maybe
aren't you that actually care about learning things.
You won't read my emails or my Google documents, but you will read very weird.
I read
Louisiana
that
purchase
make
documents.
Me smarter.
Okay,
I'll leave that there.
Bike Wonder Park made $16 million. 5 Feet Apart with Haley Lou Richardson made $13.2 million.
I tried finding a budget for 5 Feet Apart. I couldn't find one, but this is in the vein of the... Shailene Woodley basically kicked her career off with one of these. The Fault in Our Stars was the name of it a couple years ago, and she's now a big-time player in Hollywood, obviously. She's in Big Little Lies with, like, every A-lister ever.
Sure.
So these obviously do have a big way of kicking off careers, and they do make money, and that's why I'm almost positive, I haven't looked it up, but I'm almost positive this is an adaptation of another teen romance novel.
We should really do our research in those things.
I
but
can't
I hear
do
it's
research
got,
about
getting,
this.
Getting good
I, can't,
reviews.
I can't do research for 5 Feet Apart.
Mike, How to Train Your Dragon 3 had $9 million this weekend. A Madea Family Funeral had $8 million. How to Train Your Dragon's up to $466 worldwide. Madea Family Funeral's up to $59 million, basically domestically. It did do a few markets worldwide. But, you know, domestic comedies really don't stretch out that much further. But both making money.
They are both making money. Madea's always does. And How to Train Your Dragon, we talked about, you saw it, you gave it a positive review, as many people have. It's likely going to see its name at the end of the year in the animated category, we think, for the Oscars. The biggest story to me about this top 10 this week is that, you know, for how slow the box office has been for the first 12 or so weeks of 2019, now we have four first week titles in the top 10, and we're kind of gathering momentum here. And again, with every week that passes, look what we have coming up. Pet Sematary just got differing but still loud reviews out of South by Southwest. Us got huge positive reviews out of South by Southwest. We have Avengers Endgame coming up in a couple weeks. Every Disney movie from Dumbo all the way through The Lion King at the end of the summer is going to come out on pretty much a bi-weekly or once every 3 weeks basis.
Every week looks fairly stacked going
forward. So we got a lot of stuff to do and a lot of stuff to cover. And this is kind of the precursor to all of that, as Nomad Just Frida 2 and Captive State finish at 6th and 7th for the week, both breaking between $3 and $4 million a piece there.
Apollo 11 didn't do great, but it's not out in that many theaters. It's up to 5.5 million domestically so far. Fighting With My Family is now up to 20.9 million. And, you know, that's probably breaking even at the end of its theatrical run, we think. We hope. We reviewed both of those movies as well.
Here's us transitioning into Do You Care, which we just argued about doing.
No.
This is the Do You Care segment. This is where we take lesser-known news stories of the week and ask ourselves, do we, should we, or will we care about them? And it was kind of a chock-full week of news stories throughout Hollywood this week, so we got a lot to talk about here, which I'm pretty excited about. The first topic of Do You Care that we ask every week is this week's upcoming theatrical releases. Mike, we have Us, Hotel Mumbai, Sunset, all opening, the last two opening limited. Us is going to be a wide release, 3,600-plus screens. Do You Care?
Of course I care about Us. We've previewed it basically twice already this past week with our top five horror movie experiences with an Us Guess the Plot / preview episode. So that was a lot of fun. Of course, we're going to be all over that. We don't know if it's going to be a one-part OSP or a two-parter. We're kind of leaving that open right now. We'll see how we cover it, but we'll definitely see it and get you a review at the end of this week.
We're probably not going to be, it's probably not going to be the last time we talk about that movie. I would
guess.
We're
going to talk about it a lot. Yeah. Hotel Mumbai got good reviews, 77% Rotten Tomatoes, 66 Metascore is not great, but its depiction of real-life horror will strike some as exploitative, but Hotel Mumbai remains a well-made dramatization of tragic events. This is the critical consensus on Rotten Tomatoes there, so I do kind of care about that. 77% there.
Our boy Army's in it. He doesn't make bad movies.
Yeah, Sunset, we had talked about this one before. We actually discussed the trailer back in an Oscar Trailers episode. Only a 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is Laszlo Nemes. He is from the Oscar-winning Son of Saul, so I'm a little sad to see that this really was not well-received, and I care that it got bad reviews.
I remember watching that trailer and just thinking it was very odd. I remember it coming off as odd and a little bit confusing. So what once seemed like a contender for foreign feature maybe looks like it'll be falling short unless something radical happens. And Laszlo Nemes obviously does have that Oscars pedigree attached to his name. So we were excited about that one. That's why we gave it the review. But doesn't look like it's going to end that way.
Mike, I get to ask you here. James Gunn is rehired to write and well, he wrote the script already, but he's rehired to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Do you care?
Obviously. This was probably the biggest news of the week. We thought about giving it its own segment, but it happened there a couple days ago already. So a lot of stuff has been said about it. Look, this is my take, and it might be somewhat controversial because there's a lot of people out there that were affected by his words from decades past. And I understand that. This is important, though, because to me, Marvel got the call right, which is ultimately all you want out of situations like this. Let's be very clear. This isn't Louis C.K., this isn't James Franco, where he had allegations of awful sexual abuse or victims coming out saying he ruined their lives, right? This isn't that.
No.
What they did has never been excusable regardless of context or lens. What James Gunn did, it's still wrong, clearly.
He made a lot of asshole jokes on Twitter.
Right.
Back in the late 2000s or early 2000s?
About a decade ago, if I remember right. So it's still wrong. But it was more accepted by and large when it was done, which again doesn't excuse it. We were wrong as a society to accept those kinds of things, and we've evolved. Twitter was still in its relative infancy when these tweets were posted, and with its growing impact has come a stronger expectancy for everyone to be more politically correct or more understanding and acceptive of other people.
Sometimes people throw that to the
wind. At its best, certainly. What may have been still offensive but maybe less divisive a decade ago has become something much more demonized now, and that is thanks in no small part actually because of the power of social media and Twitter, where more voices from people directly affected by such comments have come out and been able to educate society at large.
Again, there's been backlashes to this.
Now, sure, yeah. Obviously, there's two sides to the coin. Twitter is not this happy-go-lucky paradise and utopia. Right. There's certainly a dark side of it, and there's those never going to get rid of all the trolls.
But I think it's good that he was held accountable for being an asshole 15 years ago, right?
Well, that's where I land on this as well. This is kind of an opportunity for him to learn and for all of us to learn.
He has apologized for what he joked about years for years. It's not like Kevin Hart where he's refusing to apologize.
I agree.
Refusing to apologize again just to make it clear. I mean, he's apologized.
And should he feel ashamed about what he posted? Yeah, absolutely. I think the degree of impact and the degree of insult, or I don't know, I don't want to generalize what Louis C.K. and James Franco did as an insult, but the degree of hurt he caused was probably less so than what the allegations that those type of men, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, have done. And what they did is and always has been illegal and a crime.
Yeah, there's crimes there, and then there's borderline
right.
stuff that's almost a crime. Like James Franco investigated Louis C.K. I mean, at least in they're close to committing crime, and they've apologized too, I guess. But it's closer to.
But actions are much worse. Sexual assault has never been okay in society.
Yeah, the thing is, but it's still so hard for us as audience members, as pundits, because we don't freaking know. We don't. A lot of it hasn't been investigated, so it is hard for us. So we're talking about it now. Like Louis C.K. admitted certain things. James Franco, there are rumors and apologized for certain aspects of certain things. We don't know the full stories. There's, you know, James Franco's still working a lot.
Yeah.
And Louis C.K. has basically been blacklisted.
Trying to come back.
So
but there's
strange.
There's a reason for that, right? And yeah. I mean, it's widely accepted by society. And we do live in this culture now where we're trying to learn how to believe people, believe the accusers, which
but
I think
yeah,
is good.
James Gunn is not in...
He's not in that ballpark.
That.
No. And what he did is not relatable to those offenses as well. So I think this is a learning opportunity, like you said. I think it is important that he apologized. I think it's important that Marvel also kind of admitted fault here as far as harshly reacting in the way they did. Yeah. I don't think he ever needed to lose his job over this.
It's good that there's some forgiveness out there, too.
Yes, people, I agree.
Everybody makes mistakes. We all do. We always have. We always will. And if you make a mistake in regards to saying the wrong thing, you know, God forbid you or I ever say the wrong thing on this podcast, whether ignorantly or whatever, we don't, you know, we're not perfect. God forbid that happens. If we lost our ability to ever, you know, communicate with people after that, to ever have a podcast. So this guy lost his livelihood for a while there. I know he went to D.C. Mm-hmm. in the follow-up, and then, but I don't know.
And he's going to be doing both.
Yeah.
That's what I've read. He's going to be doing, reportedly doing both. So the next Suicide Squad movie, which he's, I guess, gone on record saying, don't call it Suicide Squad 2. So we'll see what's with that. But and the Guardians 3. So he's, he'd be the first person to do both Marvel and D.C. now.
But he lost his baby there for a while. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy is what he made his career on, essentially. Those last two films have been huge moneymakers and, you know, just what we think of
I'm just thankful he's not being treated in the way, and not demonized in the way. Everyone is kind of more forgiving. And everyone it seems to be universally praising Marvel for getting it right, which is important to me.
Which makes you think if Kevin Hart apologized again, he could have easily been the host at the Oscars.
Yeah, there's something to that when you're too stubborn to apologize. There's something to that. Like you either believe what you said or you don't want to give in. You see yourself as being above others. There's something to it.
It's weird. We don't know the full story, so it's hard to judge. Is where I come down.
I'll judge everyone. I got you. Mike, Anna Perner has lost millions with Vice and If Beale Street Could Talk. It seems like Sorry to Bother You made a profit. This all comes out of an Award Circuit article from our friend Clayton's website over there. Do you care?
Yeah, it's sad to see these excellent movies lost money. I get it because Adam McKay and Barry Jenkins, their status would enable studios to feel confident about putting a lot of money into their properties. They made, you know, movies that could be very polarizing at the end of the day. Vice is another one of those examples where kind of that mid-budget movie failing in the box office at the end of the day. And If Beale Street Could Talk, financed closer to a mid-budget level, but not quite there. If Beale Street Could Talk comes out as a definite art film, I think we could both agree on that, with some ups and downs in terms of its audience reception, I would say. Critical reception is pretty, you know, over the top in favor of it. So it's sad to see that they did not make money. I wonder if they're going more towards the model of some of these upcoming properties. Yeah, you have David Linklater's Where Do You Go, Bernadette? But that seems like it might play to a larger audience. It's getting a lot of previews at the big AMC theater that I go to. And then you have Booksmart, which seems to be, we're going to review it, the trailer, in a few minutes.
It's funny.
It looks like it's super bad.
Yeah.
You know, another remake of that. So it might be a low budget comedy that actually can really play well and make a lot of money at the end.
Yeah. It's such a weird conundrum because you would think these movies are going to sell themselves, but obviously hasn't been the case. People need to go see these Annapurna pictures because we're going to lose this studio. It's been in financial trouble for a while and there's been a lot of headlines about it. I think studios like this who clearly value the artistic integrity over the bottom line, they're very important. But the bottom line is still what rules the day at the end of the, you know.
Yeah.
So it's still what carries the studio forward.
I'm a little afraid of the previews for Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Because it's being...
I'm terrified.
Like it's just a sappy trailer,
yeah,
right?
It doesn't look good to
me. And Richard Linklater's been anything but, right?
Yeah, I'm not enthused with how that movie looks overall, I'll be honest.
I just wonder if they're kind of mismarketing it or trying to...
And maybe that's their problem. Why be a distributor at all is my question. Why take on that financial burden? Why wouldn't you outsource that? Stay in the funding, stay in the production of these films and see if they can jump through those hoops and outsource the distribution model, link up with something bigger, have them take on that cost of it.
There's an economics term, that a vocabulary word that I cannot come and think of, but there is one there. And people are coming or would yell that at you right now.
I don't care. They're wrong. I'm right. And also,
vertical integration, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, I'm sure. But I also want to know, like, maybe instead of spending $60 million on Christian Bale's next passion project, take like a tenth of that budget and hire yourself like one of the big book guys, one of the big accountants, one of the big financiers. Hire yourself a new executive at one. Try to steal away an executive from one of the major studios that deals with the money to get on top of this shit, because you can't just burn cash here.
Well, I mean, they did have a major shakeup in their front office,
right?
With Megan Ellison, basically, you know, who was in control of everything. Now she's only control of, you know, one thing. She's basically scouting out talent, the way it seems to me, which is still good. I mean, she's still very much involved, but they definitely
brought
some.
She's clearly got her heart in the right place. Like, she obviously cares about these films and obviously cares about producing, getting in bed with people that, you know, have artistic vision and are bankable properties and reliable sources of good material. But you got to figure out the funding here. You got to do something with the books.
It's a problem. And yeah, they've been having money problems for a long time, like Zero Dark Thirty, barely, even when they have like a quote unquote hit,
right,
it still like barely makes money, which is disturbing.
There's an issue. Yeah, yeah. Without question, there's an issue.
It's a shame because a lot of great filmmakers have made a lot of great films for them. The college admissions scandal has rocked film Twitter lately. This is in regards to Felicity Huffman, Lori Loughlin, plus 31 other parents. Mike, Lori Loughlin has since lost her gigs at Fuller House for Netflix and I think several roles for the Hallmark Channel after this indictment that they had essentially bribed USC or other schools, other, you know, Ivy League schools about, I think Yale was involved.
Well,
right?
they bribed a guy
that
forged and faked a lot of documents and submitted them to these schools to help their kids get in.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the story. Here's my take, and it's a bad take, and I'm going to get yelled at for it, but they're being demonized, and they are the bad guys strictly because they filled out the check to a guy and not the facility. If they wrote these quote-unquote donations to the schools directly...
It's just like any other day of
Do
business.
People not think that this is how it works anyway? Right. That high-ranking people don't grease the wheels with universities to get their kids accepted? Like, you can't tell me that doesn't happen, right?
It always happens.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
So this is a stupid story, because if we're going to look at anyone, it's not these parents. How about you look at the freaking schools that are taking money and taking all sorts of handouts from all sorts of people and bending the rules to let this person in and that person in
now,
anyway?
If they knew this middleman was so corrupt, though, then you can get on him for that, right?
Sure. About this particular instance, yeah.
If they knew he was going to forge all these documents, essentially, that's fraud.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. I'm not saying he's not wrong, and I'm not saying they're not wrong anyway. I'm saying it's stupid to point the finger at the parents. I think the schools are the ones we need to look into here, because they're the ones letting these kids in, and they're the ones that, again, if these parents just made direct donations to the universities, it's going to be above board. It's going to be okay. And then their kids are getting in anyway, right? And I understand the argument that for every kid that you let in, you keep a hardworking kid out. And yes, that's true. And that's wrong.
Yep.
And that should be addressed. But look at the freaking schools. That's where you need to start with this type of thing.
Yeah, it's rampant. The quote-unquote legalized corruption of it all is rampant.
It's so disgusting.
It's a system of donations.
Yeah, that absolutely.
You know,
so that's my take. Yes, Lori Loughlin. Yes, Felicity Huffman. Yes, all these people are wrong, but they're not the only ones. And they're, again, sincerely, if it's you versus the college education system and the college education system is on the side of the FBI, something is wrong. Something isn't making sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. We are the wrong, with our student loan bills, right, as high as they are, we are the wrong people to be sympathetic to the college system.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm there too. Denzel Mike is going to star in Little Things from writer-director John Lee Hancock. Do you care about this?
I do. I mean, John Lee Hancock is a good director from The Help, et cetera, et cetera. Denzel starring in a movie about a Kern County sheriff named Deke, who teams with a crack LASD detective Baxter to reel in a wily serial killer. And I love serial killer dramas. Denzel hasn't been in a serial killer thriller drama in a long time.
I was just going to say, it's been a while since we've seen him track down a serial killer.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Fallen was kind of, sort of, a serial killer movie.
Kind of, yeah.
I can't remember the last time he was just like in a straight up serial killer drama. We got, like I said,
Out of Time, Man on Fire type stuff, yeah.
Out of Time.
Even though they weren't serial killers. Yeah, they
were
like, yeah.
So this seemed, I'm all in. It's great.
Was it The Bone Collector, maybe?
The Bone Collector. Yeah, yeah, that's the last
time. 99. Yeah, that's been a long time.
On his team there. Mike, the Sopranos prequel has been renamed Newark. It was called something else for a while. And will be released in September of 2020. This is an Oscars release date a year from now in a way. Do you care?
I'm trepidatiously hopeful for it. Yeah. I think it's very easy to screw this one up.
Very
easy. If you're not quite careful. Yeah, it was called The Many Saints of Newark. There's a big cast attached to it. Ray Liotta, Vera Farmiga, John Bernthal, obviously Tony Soprano himself there. James Gandolfini's kid is going to be taking up the mantle there. I don't know. This looks like it's very easy to fail. And it's been a long time since The Sopranos were on our screens.
True. So, I don't know. I think I've been rewatching some Soprano episodes here and there. Is someone I know keeps rewatching like the whole series.
I want to get back into
so goddamn good.
Oh, they're the best. They are the best.
I hate like those characters more and more.
Despicable.
Because so evil. But at the same time, that show is so good.
It's so well written.
David Chase is involved with this.
Yeah, so he is. And that's kind of like the beacon of hope, even though you don't really have, I haven't seen like the Chris Moltisanti character attached, Michael Imperioli. I haven't seen any of the original cast members really doing this. At least they haven't been listed yet, so maybe they will be at some point. I'm hopeful because I want to see more Sopranos, and if this could lead to another HBO series, all the better, but I'm worried.
I'm worried too. If they have like a flash forward scene, can you imagine after the way the Sopranos ended?
How would they do that? Like they're going to show the rest of what happened? Oh man.
Not the rest of what happened in the way the Sopranos ended, but kind of like an epilogue. Are these guys like, can you imagine that?
What do you, I don't know, understand what
you're saying that. they could, you know, market the movie that way. Like, we're going to have a scene from present day Sopranos.
Oh, God.
And to show you kind of definitively who survived, maybe.
What's Edie Falco doing? Get her on the horn. Yeah. All right. I love it. I love the idea of it. Just worried. Yellow lights blinking.
Me too.
Let's go into some trailer thoughts. All right, the biggest trailer of the week here, no doubt, was the second trailer, the first probably big official trailer, at least, of Avengers Endgame. Michael, what do we think?
So this is clearly a gimmick to take full advantage of our nostalgia going into this film about kind of the original group of Avengers, correct?
The greatest trick the Russo brothers ever played was getting all of us to believe they were letting us see a trailer for Endgame.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of new stuff. We do get some new stuff, and I think as, you know, covetous as we are for new images, we're happy about the new images that we do get. That being said,
cool new suits.
Most of this trailer is just flashback stuff in black and white.
This is nothing. This trailer is nothing. It's cool to see the new costumes. It's the culmination of a decade-long story. All that's well and good. It's going to sell itself anyway, so who cares, right?
Yeah, we thought about doing a whole episode on this, but there just wasn't enough.
Well, there's nothing here in the trailer. Like you said, it's all flashbacks. And if you go and seek out any of the videos of the nerd sites on YouTube breaking down the trailers that are usually good for a couple Easter eggs and stuff, all they do is talk about their own theories. This could mean this, or this could mean that. It's like, oh, so you don't know either.
We don't
like,
know.
They've released a trailer that was basically, what did it show us? That Rocket's in it, and that War Machine's got a new armor. That's it.
Yeah, they got the new suits. Are they Quantum Realm suits? Are they space suits? Like, that's one big question. I mean, we're interested in that question.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
You know, Captain Marvel has a fun little exchange with Thor, which was cool, and I like that.
I'm very excited to see her be integrated.
Yeah, it's cool, like, he's testing her, like, a friend on the playground. Can you hang with me and be my friend? And that's cool. He does the thing, and it's great. We're not going to spoil Infinity War and how we talk about this now, but they spoiled the shit out of Infinity War with trailer explicitly.
And I think that's smart of them, too, because they have to, like, we've been always joking about not spoiling it, too, because it's like, you know what happens. Everybody knows what happens.
I think everybody knows, but we're trying not to be jerks. Yeah, it was a kind of a disappointing trailer for us. We'll just be honest with you.
I don't think they care. I don't think anyone cares. I think we're all just in this holding pattern now of it's like, we're not going to get anything more about Endgame.
Right.
I'm surprised Thanos made the freaking poster, which is its own controversy we could talk about with how they treated Danai Gurira and finally got her face on there, which it should have been all along. But Thanos made the poster. That's the most we've seen about him related to this movie, other than that suit of armor hanging.
True. True. So, it's very strange.
Yeah.
Typically, you market the movie on the villain and what the villain's doing early on. That's not true at all. It's all about the aftermath. And that makes sense, of course. But at the same time, it's just atypical.
So we go from a trailer that really showed us nothing, but it doesn't matter because we're still equally excited about the movie, to a trailer that showed us a lot and has us very worried in Aladdin.
These costumes look so bad, these Aladdin costumes, and they stand out so much from the sand, the drab browns, and it's nothing like Aladdin was, because these, like the original cartoon, the original was a cartoon. You can have these bright colors.
That's a fact. I can verify.
You can have these bright colors in a cartoon. When you have these cartoony costumes, this looks like, no offense, Xena Warrior Princess or the Hercules shows that were over the top awesomely bad back in the day.
I'm scared. I am legitimately fearful of what this... I've never been a fan of the Disney live action remakes to begin with. I've never thought they were necessary. I understood they make a profit, they make $1 billion.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they do them? I get all that. This looks bad.
The visuals of those last few live action remakes have been stunning at the
least. Yes, that is absolutely true. And these are not.
And everything that gets criticized for Aladdin so far has been visual. Like, Guy Ritchie should be able to handle this. He's made big budget blockbusters before, and he's been a really strong filmmaker before. So why is he having so many issues with the look of this movie? The only good thing I would say, or two good things, obviously the music is still great, and
yes,
I think we're going to get some big numbers that'll work. Will Smith doesn't stay blue the whole movie either.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing because... We don't have to, like, that would be awkward, I think.
I mean, he looked ridiculous the first time we saw the Blue Genie Will Smith. Yeah, I agree. So, I would rather they put some time into fixing that, though, than cop out and say, oh, the genie's a human most of the movie anyway, so it doesn't matter. Because that's not how it was.
Yeah, I don't know what they're saying. But bottom line, I think it's a smart move after the backlash that they got with that first genie, you know,
I agree.
Spearheaded by you and your gift.
The Stay Puft Genie Man, yeah. I agree that it's a good idea to get him out of that. If it's a choice between ridiculous blue getup and human Will Smith, then yeah, go human. But either way, I'm going to have a problem with it because that's not staying true to the source material. The genie was around for most of that cartoon as a genie.
It's a problem.
Yeah, and I've seen Marwan Kanzari, who plays Jafar. He's gotten a lot of scuff online for how he looks.
Jafar is perhaps the toughest character to adapt.
I agree.
Because he is such like a... You remember Sagat from Street Fighter?
Yeah, Zagat, right?
Zagat.
Or maybe it's Zagat. I don't remember. I don't know. Either, the giant Russian.
In that movie... Whoever played his role, I got so angry at, because Sagat is such a great cartoon character.
I had a similar, yeah, I know.
And
where
he's
you're going.
Like 6'9" or whatever. He towers over everybody. He's got ridiculous proportions. Jafar is one of those characters. Towers over the rest of the cast. He's got this ridiculous skinny face, and you know that costume is so pronounced. And it looks so good as a cartoon when he's just another guy standing next to another guy. It looks so weird. So this actor actually, in a few scenes in this movie, or in this movie trailer, I should say, looks like he can act.
Yeah. Oh, he's been in some big stuff, too. I mean, he's been in Murder on the Orient Express, the Ben-Hur remake, What Happened to Monday on Netflix. But
he's just a guy, though.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's not a distinct look at all. The most distinct look, and I would say the same applies to the Aladdin they picked, to the Princess Jasmine they picked, the most distinct look we've had so far is Will Smith in blue. That's bad.
Which didn't work.
That's not a good thing. Yeah, I'm very worried about this property.
Very, very worried.
And it was such a big part of all our childhood. Like, if you're going to get one live-action remake wrong, this is not the one you can get wrong.
I just rewatched the original. It was so good.
And we all grew up on it, right? Like, yeah. All the adults now, the 20 to 30-year-olds, 20 to 40-year-olds that are buying tickets, the movie going public, were raised on Aladdin. Like, it's something near and dear to our hearts. You're going to screw up the Snow White live-action remake, you know? Like, don't screw up Aladdin and don't screw up The Lion King.
This looks like a train wreck.
Yeah. Charlie Says is another one that came out, Mike.
Mary Harron directed it. We just did a retrospective on American Psycho back in the day. And this seems very different than American Psycho. This seems like a true crime revisitation of where the Manson women were at whatever time of the setting. It looks like the 70s, 80s. And basically they flash back and tell their story of the Manson family.
Yeah.
And we have some good acting involved. It looks scary, but it looks dead serious. So that doesn't look like a horror comedy. Still, I trust Mary Harron. I'm glad she's tackling, you know, heavy subject matter of the horror variety. That's I'm loving it. There's a psychological horror angle to this based on the, you know, the investigator or the journalist who's interviewing these Manson girls. And it's fascinating to me. I like this trailer.
Yeah, same here. Sukkie Waterhouse in it. I was very intrigued by it. Matt Smith plays Charles Manson. It's kind of got middling scores right now at the Get Up, even though it's very early, 6.0 on IMDb, 49 Metascore. I'm curious as to how they get such similar prop subject matters coming out in the same year. Like, why is Mary Harron's Charles Manson movie just happen to be coming out the same year as Quentin Tarantino's Charles Manson movie? Hollywood, I always wonder about that.
Hollywood does this a lot, think. And a lot of times the second movie doesn't, you know, come out because the first movie comes out and it does well or it does mediocre. So they're like, all right, this is not Coke Pepsi.
Right.
This is not McDonald's Burger King. The market's not going to, you know, have enough room for the second viewing of this story. But it's strange. Like, you know, Robin Hood, Jungle Book, they keep coming out. Obviously, it's public domain there. In this regard, we have, I think Mary Harron's a big name, and she's been doing some good stuff recently. But she's coming out, and I think this is a small movie at the same time.
Yes, it is.
So does it have to be a humongous hit? I don't know.
Probably not, and I am interested to see her take on it. And we just got off our American Psycho rewatch where we said we want to see her directing more things. So this is a nice coming out party for her in 2019 here. So I'm excited to see it. Manson family stuff always interests me. You said it's not horror comedy, and I don't think I'd want to see a Manson family horror comedy, to be
true.
Honest.
True, yeah. Even though Once Upon a Time in Hollywood might be... Right, it might be funny. Maybe that part of the movie's not funny.
Right.
Then again, if he does...
Maybe it's a rewriting of history, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Good Boys came out, Mike.
This is Gene Stupnitsky, one of the writers for The Office and Bad Teacher. He directs this film that's coming out August 16th. Mike, this looks funny. It looks super effed up because you got young kids.
Looks
you got like
so funny.
10-year-olds, 11-year-olds. But these kids are making me laugh continuously throughout this trailer. Seth Rogen's in it. It's from those guys, basically, the Judd Apatow family tree in a way. And it looks funny.
I am falling in love with Molly Gordon as a comedic actress.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like the bad guy. He's like the antagonist who happens to be a high schooler on drugs. In this, it's really weird. Jacob Tremblay is one of the three little kids. It's super bad for little kids. It looks hysterical. It looks absolutely hysterical. I can't wait. Molly Gordon also is in another trailer that we're going to get to after this one. So she's really staking her claim as that go-to comedic actress. She was in Life of the Party, which, by the way, was underrated, I thought. I
didn't see it.
It was Melissa McCarthy. Maya Rudolph is hysterical. You're a big Maya Rudolph fan.
I am.
You should watch it. It's hokey, but she is... Maya Rudolph had me in tears at times.
Okay, I'll have to commit to it. It's on demand right now, one of the premium channels. I started watching it. I watched like the first two scenes where she's dropping her daughter off at college. It's so sappy and not funny that I was like, this movie's really good.
It's a rough start.
Stuff.
I agree. It has its highlights.
It has its highlights.
I definitely think it has its highlights. But for as far as Good Boys goes... First of all, there has to be dogs in here somewhere. If you're going to call a film Good Boys, there has to be a scene with dogs. I don't care. It should be a film about dogs.
You like dog movies.
Love dogs. I don't like watching dog movies, but I love dogs. And I'm excited to see Good Boys. It's not something that was on my radar until I watched the trailer. Now I can't wait to see it. And in a similar vein, we have Booksmart.
Yeah, this looks cool. It was a big hit at South by Southwest. Yep. 87 Metascore. Olivia Wilde directed. This is her directorial debut. Here's the premise. On the eve of their high school graduation, two academic superstars and best friends realize they should have worked less and played more. Determined not to fall short of their peers, the girls try to cram in 4 years of fun into one night. May 24th release date, starring beautiful boys Caitlin Dever. She's been in a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Bird's Beanie Feldstein, also from Neighbors 2. We also get Jason Sudeikis, Lisa Kudrow, Will Forte. This looks fun. It didn't make me laugh as much as Good Boys, the trailer. It's not a Red Band trailer, though.
Imagine if Jason Sudeikis turned down this role. His wife's directorial debut. I'm gonna pass. I can't wait for this. It's only got 9 critical reviews for its Meta rating right now, but its Metascore is an 87, so that's high.
I live this life myself.
Yeah, you tried to get it all in.
I tried to get it all in the summer before college, so that's pretty cool. Or not pretty cool of me, but cool of them to make a movie
have
about
to be
this.
Your head up my ass. I just talked about Molly Gordon. I also love Caitlin Dever, and I think Beanie Feldstein is equally. I'm equally excited about her career as I am because she seems to get it.
She was hysterical in Neighbors too. Yeah. She had a good dramatic performance in Lady Bird.
She did. Yeah, she's got a wide range, and I think these are two up and coming stars that this could be. Either one of these films, I would say, actually could be what Superbad was and kind of the kickoff to the Michael Cera, Jonah Hill, Emma Stone, that whole type of movie, a young ensemble that's destined for greatness.
Yeah, I hope they're both great.
Same here. I can't wait for either one of them. So Aladdin is in a distant fourth right now of these four trailers, right?
A distant fourth, no question. Looks bad.
Did we have 5, so it's 4th out of 5? No, it's 6th out of 5, right?
It's bad.
Yeah, it's not happy about that, but yeah, look. Four films other than Aladdin, though, that I'm excited to see and I can't wait for. And we're probably going to have our fair share of reviewing most of, if not all of them, as their time comes. 2019, I didn't feel this way about 2018 this time last year, to be honest. I'm very excited for a lot of titles coming up in 2019. I think it's going to be a heavy year. And I think it's going to be a special one.
I just made my big list on the Google Documents, my big like cloud of movies
to watch.
And I'm really excited about it, too.
Is Knives Out on it?
Oh, yeah.
Ryan Johnson just posted Knives Out. I guess finished filming. He posted all the reels on Instagram the other day of just the entire movie. And Jamie Lee Curtis commented on it, and I'm on to that. Guys, what are your thoughts about these movies? What are your thoughts about any of the subjects we talked about this week on MMO Weekly? We want to know. You could reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, at MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, and Oscar.com, at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear podcasts. TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Type in Mike, and Oscar. You'll see us staring back at you. We got that big interview, hilarious interview with Nick Kocher, one half of Britannic coming up on Wednesday this week. We also have us in the pipeline for this week. We probably have a retrospective that we're going to do as well to get ready for a re-release or a reboot or a redistribution, whatever you want to call it, for later on this week as well. Michael, with all that in mind, give these people some words of wisdom to end their Mondays on.
It sets me up perfectly because there's a lot of watching you can do, you know, along with us this week. We always talk about watch movies with us, but you can watch short YouTube videos with us, Britannic. You can watch, you know, Nick Kocher's graduation speech,
which so
is
funny.
Hysterical and something we talk about in that interview. Obviously, I watched a ton of Saturday Night Live. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He wrote for those shows. You know, he acted in Joss Whedon's adaptation of William Shakespeare, Much Ado About Nothing, which was I really that's one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. It's funny. It's a hell of a play. That's a really good movie. And you know, he's so talented. He does stand up. He's got a ton of videos out there to watch online. And the last month since we kind of, you know, locked down that we were going to interview him and it kind of didn't fall through. But bottom line is once we knew we were going to talk to Nick Kocher, I had a great time just really studying his work.
That is good wisdom too. Britannic on YouTube. Definitely go seek it out. Britannic there. And get ready to do a deep dive because the first time I saw one video, I couldn't stop. I just clicked through all of them.
They ambush you comedically. So like, funny. I laugh at the weird, like, sometimes the setup I'm in, sometimes I'm like, what? And then they ambush you and make me laugh at the weirdest moments. It's really funny.
Go watch Next Time on Lonnie, too. I binged that on YouTube. Nick's in that as well. Yep. I should have talked about that. We're watching, but maybe I'll stick to it next week for MMOW.
There we go.
Yeah, guys, when reality sucks, come watch movies with us, and we will check you out next time. Have a good week.
See you.